We've made it, friends and fans of Lock Sports Show, to episode 66. Not 666, don't worry, not 666. This is just 66.
Yeah, don't have to worry about getting superstitious. I had that vibe a few days ago going into it.
Yeah, I get superstitious sometimes, so I'm like, oh, I don't know.
As you shall.
Well, we have a variety of topics to go over this week for episode 66. The first one is that I want to talk about a little bit, kind of like a nice discussion, is a positive one, so not negative. I'm not going to scream and yell and throw a fit. No MLB rant this week. This one is, I'm reading from a newspaper article titled from the Wall Street Journal by Andrew Beaton and Miho Inada, Masters Win Boost Japanese Golf. And I'm a big fan of the Masters. It's probably, maybe, my favorite sporting event of the year. I've always been a huge fan of the Masters in Augusta, Georgia. I like golf. I watch golf sometimes. It's one I like to watch. I know a lot of golfers. And so the winner of the Masters this year, the 2021 Masters, in April, thank goodness. I thought it was a mistake to hold it in 2020. I know they had to hold it due to the COVID-19 pandemic. They pushed it to November instead of the yearly April. So it was kind of odd to see it in November, but thankfully this one was back in April. And the defending champ was Dustin Johnson in November. That was his second major win. He won also the U.S. Open back in 2016, so that was his second one. And the Masters is always the biggest one you can win. Get the green jacket, and when you're at Augusta, along with all the other champions, you put on your green jacket in front of the crowd, in front of the fans, in the clubhouse. You look awesome, because not many people win the Masters, but to have an opportunity to wear a green jacket is a golfing fan and a golfer's dream. So the winner this year was Hideki Matsuyama from Japan. He is one of my favorite golfers. I've been a big fan of him for years. And in winning the Masters, he became the first Japanese man to win the Masters. And this was awesome for the country of Japan and also for Hideki and his fans. And some quotes I want to read, showing how big golf is in Japan, is Mike Ishia, chairman of Golf Tech and founder of the Tokyo-based Golf Digest Online, Inc. Key quote said, "Japan's fans, golfing fans, have waited for this opportunity. All the pressure is on him to carry Japan. It'd be huge for up-and-coming professional golfers to see someone like Hideki make it through in a major." That was from Mike. Also, very cool in Japan, the culture in golf has changed, according to Andrew Beaton. He states that golf, when it started in the 1970s in Japan, when it got big, most people who did golf were rich CEOs and businessmen. But as of late, women, regular people, everyday people in Japan will play golf, not just the rich CEOs. Everyone's playing golf in Japan now. And it was awesome for Hideki to win this tournament. Very proud of him, becoming the first PGA winner. Let's see. Not the first Japanese man to win a PGA Tour event. That was back in 1983. Iso Aoki, he was the first to win a PGA Tour event as a Japanese man. But Masters win is Hideki's. And just overall, his third round was where he made his stand. That's where he came on strong. He was electric. Hideki was not passive. He wasn't conservative. Wasn't, "I'll play it slow and easy and just take no risks." He wanted to take risks. So he took risks in that third round, vaulted up to the top of the leaderboard at 13 under. And on Sunday, the last day of the tournament, he managed to play more conservative because he had the lead. So when you have the lead, playing more conservative is approach. Well, he was able to end at 10 under and hold off Will Zatorius, who was at 9 under, to claim the Masters win. And finally, just to wrap it up, it was really fun. When the Masters champion wins, they go to the clubhouse, and the chairman of Augusta, another golf person, and the champion, the defending champion, and the winner sit in a clubhouse in tears, along with a announcer, a journalist, and he said they give him the green jacket. So Hideki got the green jacket. He stand it up, put it on, and he's. Now move to this week's coverage of the Premier League here on the Bullhawk Sports Show. Coming down to the wire, a few games left on the season for Manchester City and Fulham. Fulham has, after the Wolves match we're going to go over shortly, they have 6 games remaining, and Manchester City now has 7 remaining, both getting towards the end. Manchester City looks like they're going to wrap up the Premier League title again for their 5th one in franchise history, in the club history, whereas Fulham still dogfight in 18th spot, still down in the bottom dollar zone in the table, needing to get a win is getting worrisome with the amount of losses they're piling up in a row. We still neck and neck with Newcastle, still only 3 points behind them, and they have not played yet. So on Sunday, April 11th, Newcastle-Burnley will be a big match, because if Newcastle wins that match, then they'll be 6 points ahead of Fulham, whereas a loss will still be 3 and a draw before. So rooting for Burnley win, which is more than possible. Burnley play great at home at Turf Moor. On the road, they're just what at average, but at Turf Moor, they tend to be a tough out. And they are better in Newcastle. Burnley has better squad, better scorers, better goalie, better defense. They're better coaching. They're better in Newcastle in all regards. So unless something goes wrong, or they say, we don't really care, and they lose Newcastle, it should be okay. Next time we go over a Fulham match, they'll still only be 3 points behind, hopefully. So now we'll get to the 2 matches we're going to cover for this week's episode. The matches are Manchester City versus Leeds United, and Fulham versus the Wolverhampton Wolves. Officially known as the Wanderers, but no one calls them that. People call them the Wolves. And usually we do chronological order on this program, but to shake it up, we'll go over the Manchester City Leeds United game first. Mainly because that's the less important game in all regards, the grand scheme of things. So we're going to go to that one first and fast, and then move on to the Fulham one, which has more to discuss. So the lineups first for Leeds United and goal. Elan Messier, defenders, Luke Eiling, Liam Cooper, Elzen Ozuki, Diego Llorente, midfielders, Todd Roberts, Stuart Dallas, Helder Costa, Rafinha, Calvin Phillips, and Patrick Bamford as the striker. Then for Manchester City, in goal, Ederson, defenders, John Stones, David Ake got an opportunity this match. This is one of his first opportunities this season. Good player, came over from Bournemouth, talented, hasn't really got an opportunity, he's been buried on the defense depth chart with a wide array of talented defenders on the club. He is young, maybe it'd be good if he goes somewhere else for his playing experience, for him to get more playing time. I don't mind having him on the bench coming to start. Good to see him come into a match. Pedro Mendy, Joel Cancelo, midfielders, Alexander Chichenko is back after a couple games not starting, Bernardo Silva, Fernandinho, forward Raheem Sterling, Gabriel Jesus, and Ferran Torres. This was a match between Leeds, who have been very good in their first season back in the Premier League after a long drought. They probably could finish reasonably 9th, 10th, which is more respectable. Though they're hovering around Aston Villa, around that area, and a little bit behind Arsenal. So around there, they could finish maybe ahead of Arsenal, maybe a little bit behind or ahead of Aston Villa, depending on their final matches. They have won 3 in a row, so they are playing well, Leeds United. And how it went to start, no goal between either side after 35 minutes, besides a Nathan Ake yellow card, it was 0-0. A little bit before halftime, Leeds United got on the board when Stuart Dallas had a nice goal. City did dominate possession. They always dominate possession. We always do. We did have a good chance for Raheem Sterling before the Stuart Dallas goal, but it was not to be. So Stuart Dallas, on the 42nd minute, had a low shot, somehow went into the net to make it 1-0 Leeds. But right away, maybe 2 minutes later, Liam Cooper was given a red card for Leeds, so he was ejected, removed from the game. And that was what we stand at halftime. So 1-0 at half. And they made a substitution after halftime with Patrick Bamford leaving for Pascal Strich. So 1-0. Then in the 58th minute, Nathan Ake took off for Ilkay Gundogan, who they added to the midfielder. Ilkay's been not as great as he used to be. He was. I don't want to say he used to be. But for a time, he was on fire. He was scoring like every game, it seemed. He was leading the team from helping from the loss from Kevin De Bruyne and Sergio Aguero. Ilkay was the man, winning back-to-back players of the month in the Premier League. He was on fire. El Fuego. He hasn't been as hot lately. Part of that has done with the people coming back from injury, which has helped. And the team is rounding into form. And he has not needed to score as much goals to try to compensate for the lack of players. Then in the 63rd, Ty Roberts left for Robin Koch. Then in the 68th, a yellow card to Azin Azou for Leeds. Finally, Fulham, we'll get to them, but finally, Manchester City got on the board when, after a substitution, Phil Foden came for Benjamin Mendy. Fernand Torres scored, assisted by Bernardo, to make it 1-1. Then Bernardo got a yellow card, so 1-1. Good job. They dominated the second half, City did, but were only able to get one goal out of it, which was kind of disappointing. So basically, with about a second left, Stuart Dallas, who had scored earlier, got a through ball from Azian Ozugi. He found Stuart Dallas, who got past Ederson to make it 2-1 win for Leeds. Moving up to 45 points, 9th on the table. This was City's 4th loss of the year. Now they have 74 points, still 14 clear of Manchester United, and still need 11 to claim their 5th title. Next match is April 21st versus Aston Villa on the road for City, and Leeds April 19th versus Liverpool at home. We now pivot to the second and final match for this week in the Premier League coverage. That is Fulham versus the Wolves. This was a huge match for Fulham. A win and we could have overtaken Newcastle. A loss potentially could stay the same exact place we were before the match. In a draw, we could have eked out up one more point. But Fulham has been bad lately, coming off Aston Villa 3-1 loss and a Leeds United loss prior to that. I was getting nervous. We should be beating teams if we want to stay up like the Wolves. But alas, that was not to be. We'll now discuss why that was not to be, why that didn't happen. So for lineups, for the Wolves, goalkeeper, Rui Patricio, defenders, Ryan Al Nouri, Connor Cody, Nelson Sumdo, Romain Sass, midfielders, Pedro Neto, Ruben Neves, Daniel Ponce, Leander Zinchenko, Anola Traore, and Willian Jose. Now for Fulham and goal. Alphonse, defenders, Joachim Anderson, Terence Kongolo, making a rare start. Interesting to see him play on the defense. Part of that was due to injury. So they decided to, with Adam Lookman not playing, they decided to put in Kongolo. And then Olin Neal, like usual. Midfielders, Kanagete, Mario Lemina, Harrison Reed, and Antti Robinson. Forwards, Alexander Mitrovic, Bobby Reed, and Ruben, the Invisible Man, Loftus-Cheek, who's been better lately. I'm thinking dropping the moniker for now. He has been more impressive. He hasn't scored yet. He hasn't done it on the assist sheets or the score sheets, but he has been improving, getting more involved in the action, looking more at pace with the rest of the club, and the chemistry has improved. Where it was really poor, it's now more average to above average. This game was very low scoring. The Wolves are a low scoring team who don't allow too many goals. They allow some, but not at a crazy pace. And Fulham, like we talk about every time, can't score at all, but they usually allow low amount of goals so they can get out draws and once in a while a win. But that didn't happen. The first great chance was in the 28th minute as Ruben Loftus-Cheek had a fancy header from Antti Robinson's left wing cross, but Loftus-Cheek, as he has most of the year, missed, which was disappointing. I thought he could do it. Hopefully he can do it. Hopefully he gets a goal before the end of the season. And right at halftime, Willian Jose thought he'd scored the goal to take a 1-0 lead for the Wolves, but his header was taken off the board, disallowed after a VAR review ruled Daniel Ponce to have been offside. That was a big break. Instead of being 1-0 down at half, we were still down, not down, still 0-0. Bobby Reed had a great chance, 20 yards from the shot, but it was missed. Then Rui Patricio made a smart stop to keep Antti Robinson's right foot shot out of the net. Finally, deep in extra time, Adam Traore broke our hearts with a hard hit shot into the roof of the net from a very small window. This was a big loss for Fulham, our fourth in a row. Now are still in 18th with 26 points, three behind Newcastle. And they are the advantage Newcastle has. They have played two less games than us, which is a big problem. Is not a big problem, but is kind of interesting. And this was also the Wolves' first win at the Craven Cottage. Takes them up to 12th with 38 points. Upcoming matches are we play on April 18th versus Arsenal on the road. And the Wolves play April 17th versus Sheffield United at home. They should be able to win that so they can reasonably get to 41 points. Fulham It's got to be Arsenal. They're not that great. TJ Benny the Bull is probably dancing in his seat. He'll be like, oh, Arsenal, baby. But no, I'm predicting, hoping for a Fulham win. So I'm going to go Fulham defeat Arsenal somehow. I'll say 1-0. Basically, that's all I'm hoping for these days. Low scoring affairs. Fulham, the only way to win for us, at least. I haven't seen any high scoring wins from us. So hopefully 1-0 win over Arsenal. That would be a big plus. And stay tuned for more on the Bulldog Sports Show coming up very soon. We're back here on the Bulldog Sports Show. We pivot from our Masters and Timberwolves talk. I know Timberwolves, we don't talk about them, but we somehow did this time. But we pivot to the Blackhawks. The Chicago Blackhawks are fighting for the finals playoff spot in the Central Division. They are fighting with the Nashville Predators for the fourth spot. Right now they're close, but in the end, I think the Predators might take advantage of Blackhawks' sloppy play as of late. But the Blackhawks did win their last game against the Columbus Blue Jackets in their regular season finale between the two teams. The Blackhawks won 4-3 over the Blue Jackets. Good game overall. Came back and beat Jonas Capersano, Patrick Laine, and the Blue Jackets. And the Blackhawks are still relevant, still close to the playoff spot, even with the trades they did, which I rant a lot about Stan Bowman, that he's making the wrong trade, he's making the wrong free agency signing, he doesn't know what he's doing. But in this point, I have to give him credit. Mostly all the moves he made are positives for the Blackhawks' future. Because right now, the Blackhawks, even if they sneak in as the fourth spot in the Central Division, probably going to go home fast. And building for the future is smart for Stan Bowman and the Blackhawks ownership. So let's get to the trades they did on the 2021 trade deadline. The first one is Matthew Highmore. You might recognize his name. He was very good in the 2020 playoffs. He had a game-tying goal with less than 5 minutes left in Game 3 of the Edmonton Oilers-Blackhawks series. Highmore tied it up from a great pass by Patrick Kane, like always, to Matthew Highmore to make it 3-3. And Blackhawks won that game. And that was a big moment for Matthew Highmore. He also had a big goal. It's the Golden Knights later in the playoffs as well. And Matthew Highmore was traded to the Vancouver Canucks for Adam Gaudette. This trade sends Matthew Highmore, who is a fringe NHL player, according to fanside.com, and he is on the fourth line, so he is buried on the Blackhawks' forward depth chart. And he's good, he's fine, but Adam Gaudette might be even better for the Blackhawks down the line. He has a higher ceiling than Matthew Highmore, in my opinion, and Fanside article's opinion as well. And when Gaudette arrives, he'll play on the fourth line. He has a decent ceiling offensively. In 2019, he had 12 goals, 21 assists, and 33 points overall. All of career highs. A good season for a fourth liner. And now, Gaudette is heading to the Blackhawks. Matthew Highmore is heading to Vancouver. And Fanside graded all the trades, and they gave this one an A, and I would agree with that. The second one that we want to talk about is Matthias Janmark. We signed him at the beginning of this season for chump change. 1 year, only a couple million dollars. Janmark, fine veteran. He made a name for himself in the Dallas Stars season last year when he helped them in the playoffs. And the Blackhawks took him on a low-cost deal, low risk. And Janmark performed above and beyond, which I could have expected. He was fantastic for how much we paid for him. And he's the kind of guy that you always look to trade. A guy whose ceiling can't get any higher at this point. His ceiling was as high as it could be based on his performance. He has been not as good as of late, but still, what good job by Sam Bowman to trade him for some pieces, considering when we signed him, we probably didn't expect to get anything out of him, but we got strong play and a 2021 second round pick and a 2022 third round pick. And we only gave up Myanmark and a 2022 fifth rounder. So extra draft picks that help us get under salary cap as well. And Myanmark goes to a Stanley Cup contender, which is good for him. He's good in the playoffs. He deserves to have a chance to win a Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks aren't doing that, so this makes sense for Myanmark and the Hawks' time frame. They gave it an A, and I agree with that. Next one is Blackhawks did a trade with the Avalanche. We traded away Carl Soderberg, and we did a good job with this one. Soderberg, we signed for El Cheapo contract at the beginning of the year, and he wasn't even supposed to be on the Blackhawks. We weren't supposed to sign Carl Soderberg, but the injury to Kirby Dach, one of our best young guys, caused an immediate need for a player to take over his spot. So we signed Carl Soderberg off the garbage heap for a couple bucks. And Soderberg, was he great? Was he fantastic? No. But in his defense, it did take him a while to get back from some complications. And when he finally arrived on the ice, he was inconsistent. And he is a veteran. And we don't need any veterans right now on the team. So it makes sense to trade him to the Avalanche, who could win the Stanley Cup this season. And he actually was on that team before. He used to be on the Avalanche for a number of seasons before then he left. And they're looking for a Stanley Cup win, like I said. So Soderberg will help him probably. Then for what we got back in return, Josh Dickinson is a young guy. He might not make it to the NHL, but still has developing potential. And then Ryder Rolston is probably the bigger name than Dickinson. He's very young, only 19, drafted last year. He played in Notre Dame in college, and also he spent time with the Waterloo Blackhawks and United States National Development Programs. He could be really good, maybe. Ryder Rolston, his potential is very appealing. They give it a B, and I would probably say readable. Next one was a guy, to be honest, I forgot was even on the Blackhawks. I completely forgot about him until they traded him. But that was Madison Bowie. He was traded to the Canucks along with a 2021 fifth round pick. And we got a 2021 fourth round pick. So our second deal with the Canucks this season and the trade deadline. And Madison Bowie wasn't needed in our plans. Was whatever. We didn't really need him. But we got a fourth round pick out of it, so why not? And he was a defenseman, so maybe we could get some better defensemen. That's something we struggle with, our defense. But overall, getting a draft pick out of it, sure. This is not a sexy deal by any means. I'm not going to be like, Stan Bowman is a genius in the GM room. This is more just, okay, we made the deal. Okay, we have two more to discuss. Maybe one more, actually. The next one is we left the Florida Panthers. We traded away to former coach Joe Quenneville and his Panthers. We traded Lucas Walmark and Lucas Carlson for Brett Connolly picks and some prospects. So this one, Brett Connolly, veteran. He was really big with the Washington Capitals when they won the Stanley Cup. Connolly was a big part of that with some goals in the finals. He had a game four goal. He was big. He did sign a four-year contract for $20 million when he signed in 2019. He's had 19 goals, 14 assists in his first season for the Panthers, but his production and role decreased under Joe Quenneville. Danny's put on waivers, which means the team wants him gone. Danny's put on the taxi squad, which means he's not been playing in the real team. He sat out 3 weeks, but then he came back. So Brett Connolly...
That's a real thing, that taxi squad.
Yeah, that's for people, like if they need someone right away due to an injury, they can be immediately brought up.
Oh, kind of like G League.
Yeah, like the G League.
Yeah.
Because they have, like the AHL, where like the Rockford IceHogs, but this is like guys who are like immediately available. Yeah, before we get to that, last couple comments on this trade. So, Wallmark was another guy we got for El Cheapo to begin the season. He was just...
He was
El Cheapo. It wasn't a big contract.
Yeah.
He was another guy that if he performed average or decent, it would have been a success. But he performed perfectly adequate. Carlson was perfectly fine as well. So, both of them are now on... a Panthers team that could win the Stanley Cup, so that's better for them. And a quote by the Fort Panthers, they said, Fort Panthers GM Bill Zito announced today the club has acquired defenseman Lucas Carlson and Lucas Wallmark. And Carlson has appeared in 12 games this season with the Blackhawks recording one assist, so he wasn't very good, but in his defense, only 12 games. He played more with the Rockford IceHogs this season, in 7 games. And he hasn't been that great overall, so I didn't have any problems with Carlson being traded. And then Wallmark, 25, his appearance 16 games this season, posting 3 assists. He was good in the Panthers. He did play with them before, so he's going back to the team that he was actually on, so why not for him go to a Stanley Cup contender, whereas the Blackhawks are not that. And finally, the last guy, the final countdown, the final one, Brad Morrison has been traded. He is going away from Blackhawks. Goodbye, Brad. You didn't do anything, so but goodbye. So the big news that DJ Venable alluded to was the Rockford... The Rockford IceHogs are AHL affiliate. We bought them, so now we own the Rockford IceHogs.
It's official.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Do you believe it's a good move?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a good move.
Yeah, it can only add to it benefits and get the IceHog name out there more. And possibly get games to come out, because how often do they actually do play at the UC, which is probably still unlikely yet, like at least we have where the Blackhawks train, which is a neighbor to the UC. And the Wintrust Arena, if anything, if you get them to play more exposure and be faster to get players up to the Blackhawks' main roster, if you will. I actually was really happy when I saw that. Like, the news came up out of nowhere when I was watching the sports brief. So,
I know, you saw that one before I did, which I was surprised.
Like, whoa!
I think it's a good time to transition to the next topic, so we'll be back after some quick messages.
Home, the this will be the first time that we face Wendell Carter Jr. here at home. So it's going to be a lot of different emotions, and should be a good one. Yeah, let's get to our matchup against the Hawks. And this was on Friday the 9th, and we did predict... We did predict a few of the games, and so we're looking for, you know, continuing the win streak. And so we're up against some major competition air. Clint Capella and Trae Young were due for success against us, so we... And also, I found it as well, and it was tough for us to catch up. We did have a little bit of the edge at the beginning, played at a good hot start, and yet we couldn't continue that moment.
Now for the starting five for both teams. First, the Bulls. At small forward, we have Patrick Williams. Then at small power forward, we have Fatted Young, Nikola Vukovic at center, Zach LaVine, shooting guard, and Tomas Satoransky at the point. And first, before we move to the Hawks starting five, my goodness, was this starting five crappy. Besides Vukovic and LaVine, Pat, Fad, and Satoransky didn't do anything. I mean, Satoransky had 10 assists, so that's really good, but scoring, he didn't really do anything.
A lot of assists for a game, at least.
I guess I'll give him a defense. He did get 10 assists, but Fad Young and Pat Williams didn't do anything.
Yeah, that's what he's supposed to do. Yeah, he wasn't like himself, the last few games, where he scored a lot.
Now for the Hawks starting five, we have Trae Young, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Clint Capella, Solomon Hill, and Kevin Huerter. And overall, their starting five outplayed the Bulls starting five balanced-wise. Besides Solomon Hill, who was horrendous, the other four scored double figures. Aided, of course, by Trae Young's 42 points, 9 assists, 8 rebounds. He was unbelievable, especially late. The thing that hurt me the most was at halftime, he had 16, but then by the end of the game, he exploded. And also, the Bulls couldn't stop Clint Capella in the paint, which is a problem. I've noticed that recently. We have been having big problems guarding centers in the paint.
Capella's middle name, it's Dumba. And he is the highest earning team athlete in Switzerland's history.
Wow.
So he definitely has earned his stripes in the NBA, let alone for the Hawks. He's one of their most consistent players. And now that they have veteran Lou Williams on their squad, they're stronger than ever. Also, Danilo Gallinari was hot in this one as well.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
6 rebounds and assists. He was a big trouble for us in the second half, especially.
Yeah, he wasn't that good in the first half. He was pretty cold, but the second half, he caught on fire.
Right, I started noticing every other move. I was whoa, how are we supposed to guard?
We're not supposed to.
That son of a gun, as they say. Yeah, we're up for a big challenge. So, Tony Snell kind of whatever. For the Hawks.
Yeah. What was wrong with Markkanen? He had another bad game. Only 5 points. What was the issue?
Could be unmotivated since he's on the bench.
Yeah, I'll bet, yeah.
Or there's like some issues that we don't know of. So it could have, you know, a couple things have to do with it. I felt like he wasn't really out there.
I know, to be honest, I forgot he played. Like, to be honest, like, Markkanen? Oh, yeah, he was out there, but...
I feel like you're either first or you're not really there, right? Like, if you're a starter, then you're going to be there for majority. You're going to look for a Clint Capella, a Trae Young, Bogdanovic. Well, in this case, yes, still. Bogdanovic was part of their lineup, and then for us, you're going to notice that Thaddeus Johnson, you're going to notice Nico Vucevic.
And Zavina.
Sadaransky, right? Yet, he's been kind of played like in the background lately, and so I guess if they're not producing, you know, like as most expected, you're going to fall down. And so, despite, I mean, he was there 27 minutes now, so he was like one of the top. But I guess he's not like as much there versus like Vuč, Levine, and Sadaransky. They carried the team for the most part in terms of being out there. Yet, we did get some progress. How can you, in 15 minutes yet?
I was impressed.
For Troy Brown.
I thought he looked good in his limited minutes. He's so raw, so young, but the thing that's funny is that he scored as many points as Markkanen and Brown. I'm like, he looking good, impressed. He's been proving where Markkanen, horrible. It's funny how expectations and pressure and a fan's point of view can change based on the player. Because Troy Brown had five, Markkanen had five, but I'm griping about Markkanen and Boris Brown. I'm like, he looked pretty good. Did not.
Later on. Yeah, in this case, we didn't. I guess he was dealing with what he was dealing with. He was probably the most limited active player on the Bulls with only 12 minutes, yet effective with 3 rebounds. And he is the specialty. And then and blocks and 4 points. What about Kobe White? He looked in the middle here. 11 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists.
Yeah, he was pretty good in this one. I think that's his comfort zone. If he gets 10 points, maybe 4 or 5 rebounds, 4 assists, I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
I'd like to see some more steals.
He's following, and you know, he's not a starter. But yeah, he's going to earn his way back to it and getting, because before it will be, you know, 15 or 20 plus.
Yeah.
Slowly he's coming back up. Climbing back up. He's a starter once again. All right, so. For back to the starters, what do you think was up with Thad and Pat?
I think Thad was tired. He's been having to do a lot lately. And he was probably due for an off night, in my opinion.
Yeah, you could have easily put in like a Tice or Markkanen even in the starting lineup, yeah. They didn't. I mean, they're limited with who could have played out there that night. Anyway, didn't show any signs of hurt. He's back to himself, carrying the team, bringing the excitement to us, the fans. He is an all-star, and so we don't expect anything less. And before we get to him in detail, Booch. All right, so CJ usually gives his grades for each player. And so, if I remember correctly, he gave Booch an A-.
Hold on, I have my notes on me for...
Yeah.
I don't want to give you the wrong grades. Because then you'll be like, he lied to me. Let's see. Okay.
You gave him a straight A.
Oh yeah, I found it.
Yeah, you gave him a straight A. Right.
Yeah, that gives Zach an A+. Yeah, he scored 5 points. Woohoo!
Yeah. Put the zero at the end because he got 50. A new career high for Zach. All-star Lamy. And he backs up. I still look at him as the guy for the Bulls. It's not Booch of this.
Right? Not yet.
I feel like even Booch, like, he likes to throw the ball to like a lot. So in here, the spin losing made the Bulls look good and himself. So yeah, 8 rebounds, 5 assists with 50 spectacular points in the paint, downtown, wherever he was, all over the place, in a good way, of course. And yeah, he topped his previous career high, which I believe was 44. So it would have made this 10 times more if we did win. Yeah, it wasn't like we were blown out. We were for a little while. We had them. Yeah, we started struggling in the second half and the third quarter. We couldn't come back. It was close. Yeah, different mistakes right there. But like, Markkanen wasn't contributing anymore. So we just fell off with a 120-108 loss. That brought our record to 22-29, if that was already updated. And so, yeah, on the flip side, Trae Young, in the victory at 42, and then Clint Capela 22. So, Hernan Gomez.
Yeah, he's too good.
Yeah, no, he's not one of the top players.
his one rebound might have been too good.
Yeah. But yeah, like, all right, so let's run down real quick. T-Wolves lineup.
Sure.
And so at small forward, we have Josh Okogie. At power forward, Jaden McDaniels. Kyle Anthony Towns at center. Anthony Edwards at shooting guard, and Ricky Rubio at point. And then the bench, they have a strong, a few players, Nas Reid and D'Lo Russell, who was spectacular here. He had 27 favorite bounce courses. He was one of the most consistent in the entire league. And so the fact that we're close to having him on the Bulls, maybe not close enough. But yeah, there is definitely a lot of interest in him coming from the Warriors. And so yeah, he returned. And so we have a real strong team here with T-Wolves. Probably with Towns, the best to match D-Lo, 27, and then 12 against 8 assists. And also Ricky Rubio, 17, and Edwards with 15. It was definitely a good start at first. Yet it got really competitive, not so good second quarter. And we started to pick things up in the third, and they matched us in the fourth. So it's a bit too much for us. It had a big gap. We did get back a few players being active and Denzel Valentine on the bench. Yeah, that would be all. So for us, we had a starting lineup.
Yep.
Pat Williams, same starters. Thad Young, Nico Vucevic, Tibbet, Zach LaVine, and Tomas Satoransky. So here we saw Troy Brown step up quite a bit. And I don't believe he has a comfort zone necessarily, since he showed that he a little bit better than he was the last, and he had 15, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, very good. That alone, would you give him a high grade?
Yeah, I'd say B plus.
Yeah, oh, definitely. An A for F, that is too, very close. And then Markkanen's woes continue.
F. That's not F, but still not good.
Yeah, and then Kobe continued where his comfort zone is at 11, off the bench. And Daniel Tice feels quite hot right here. I feel like so at one point he slapped the ball out. Also, Magic Johnson as well, even though he did light up the scoreboard once again. It was probably time to have someone like Tice in place of Thad Young. Yeah, that didn't happen. So, yeah, it was time to rest him for a couple games. And Pat Williams, what do you think was up with him? He didn't really contribute.
I think he's going through the classic rookie woes. Most rookies have that wall they hit at some point during the season. And I think Pat Williams, is easy to say, he's not good enough. But that's not true. He's been very good in stretches. And I still think he could contribute big time on this team. Keep in mind he's only 19. He's not 35. He's brand new. He's still improving. And he needs to get more confident in himself. He has skills. He has moves. But I think he's dealing with a lack of confidence right now.
Yeah.
He's being too passive, too off the ball. He's giving it to LaVine and Vooch. They take charge, not him. And I don't want, say, Pat to score 80 a night or something, but if he scored maybe 10 a night, I'd say that was a victory based on...
Yeah, I've seen last week where he went crazy.
Yeah, because... The issue is the bench is not scoring a ton, which is fine, but we need the starting lineup outside of LaVine, Vooch, and probably Thad, I guess, on a consistent basis to score more, so Pat Williams and Satoransky to chip in more. Because I mentioned that based on minutes and role. Because Coby White did only play three less minutes than Satoransky, but they play different roles in that Coby White is a scorer, not a passer, whereas Satoransky is a passer, but he needs to make his own shot as well. But, I don't know. We lost to a crap team, and overall disappointing that we couldn't get it done against the Timberwolves.
Right, yeah, Zach and Booch definitely led this, and Zach, he, again, 20-plus, I thought this way, yeah, 30, and, yeah, crap team, as I said towards the end, that it was a really good moment with three of them post-game with, Towns family with Kyle Anthony's dad and self, all three. Rupug then as the team of stars still healing from a year ago with mom. And so, yeah, I thought that was a real moment. I got to catch that at the end.
We've reached the final segment of episode 66. A bit of programming note, we have removed the NWSL talk for this week and are shifting it to episode 67. Just a bit of programming note. And now we move to the final segment on baseball. First?
Yeah. More time sensitive.
Yeah.
And it's more fitting that we celebrate this special day. And on top of that, a very cool moment of the week for the White Sox.
Yep.
First, a certain day.
Yes, it is Jackie Robinson Day in baseball. So every April 15th, all the players wear number 42, Jackie Robinson's number, on the back of their jersey, decals, all around the stadium. And this isn't a big issue for some players, like, oh, it's obvious who that is. But it can be a problem sometimes when watching a game you don't know the players yet that well. Like, who is that? Number 42, well, that doesn't help. Who is that? But that's just a funny thing. Because some teams don't wear names on the back of their jerseys already, so it doesn't come into play. For example, the New York Yankees, since they founded 100 years ago, they always were. Had the number on the back, no name. And some teams wear the names, like the Cubs wear the names, but some don't. So no, everyone, number 42 number right now. And that's very cool to see. Former commissioner Bud Selig, he was the one who came up with the idea and long overdue. He, I think 2004, he started Jackie Robinson Day in baseball every April 15th. That was the first day that Jackie made his first appearance for the Brooklyn Dodgers. So that's why they chose April 15th, his first game. And he had a great career. Multiple-time All-Star, broke records, broke the color barrier for baseball, did many other things. Great guy. And if you want to learn more about Jackie, a great movie that I can recommend is 42. It is a biopic movie with some embellished things for a dramatic effect, but very good overall, detailing Jackie's appearances on the Brooklyn Dodgers, him starting playing for them, and features many good cast as well with Harrison Ford and the late Chadwick Boseman.
Oh, there you go. Go ahead and jam it. So,
we did reference that 2 years ago.
Yeah, Chadwick was,
still alive then.
And it's when he, yeah, that shock, you know, that shocking day. So, top of that, not only is today the day of cross baseball for the celebration, Robinson Day. So, this is also celebrated Friday, tomorrow, as well.
Yep.
As we speak. So 2 days, it's going to be nice. It's going on for a little bit longer. And Lynch Nights will feature exclusive content for the players, sharing in their own words how Lynch inspires them to this day. And then this is also, I'm sure many fans like numbers, and this is a celebration for the 101st anniversary of the Negro Leagues from February. As the White Sox honored the first thing before this, the Chicago American Giants, by raising the flag at US Cellular/Guaranteed Rate Field. And a quote by Tim Anderson, one of the big signs on the Sox, is, says, "He's the reason I'm here. Nick was a trailblazer, and we all owe him a lot. He's the reason I put on this uniform every day." And then top of that was "Thank You, the Heart" by the White Sox Twitter. And also, the flag will remain raised in respect to those who paved the way for African Americans. So that includes Robinson and among all the others. And it says it's definitely means a lot to be able to come back on this day, be able to put that 42-1, as you know, is very significant since the White Sox activate Tim Anderson from injury list. He's back, and what a day to return. And I said I couldn't be more happy to be back on this day, and I'm going to wear that 42 in honor and pride today. And that leads us to the big news of the week.
Yep, some what great news for the Chicago White Sox. After last year's Lucas Giolito no-hitter, the White Sox have recorded their second no-hitter in a matter of months, with Mr. Injury-Prone coming back from Tommy John 2 years ago. Carlos Rodon has thrown his first career no-no. Congratulations to Carlos Rodon. I have been negative on him based on he's been injured constantly. He has potential. He has a mix of good stuff as a left-hander, especially with some off-speed pitches, with curveball really good, for example. But he's never been able to put it into the field effort because he's always been sitting on the dugout or getting surgery. But this is amazing in multiple ways. For a no-hitter is amazing in itself, but amazing that he only got Tommy John around 2 years ago, which is a life-altering as an athlete. And he was able to come back on the mound, and actually he looked good to start the season, but this is obviously his best start so far. But he threw a no-hitter against the Cleveland Baseball Club, former Cleveland Indians, now just the Cleveland Baseball Club. And Carlos was... They don't call it the Indians anymore.
Yeah, they reference it to MLB in terms of
They might say Indians, I guess, in some places, but they don't wear nowhere on the field, nowhere on their jerseys, nowhere screams Indians at all. It's just a boring old C, so.
That's a nice change.
Yes, so now for the game itself. He took on a Cleveland team that is not very offensively overpowering. They have struggled with their offense and the plate. Some examples have been the loss of Francisco Lindor, their best player. He was traded to the New York Mets. And DJ Benny the Bull, can you continue why I take care of something right now? Thank you.
So, I said, the first 25 is facing before losing a bit to the fourth. one team bat for slider that hit catcher of Cleveland team, Perez, in the foot. So this is a kind of seat of your pants, flying the wall, lightning struck at the right time, moment. No one would see it coming. And so Rodon.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming.
Fun. And this wasn't anticipated the way I originally thought, that it was the Sox, the flip side, that they were the ones that suffered, you know. And so, all right. Yeah, with all the positive news that came up from it, I was like, all right, they're the ones who accomplished this.
So, a little bit backstory. As a White Sox supporter, as someone who watches the White Sox, if you had said, Rodon, will he be the next one to throw a no-hitter, they would have laughed you out of the stadium. And why is that? Because in December, he was non-tendered by the White Sox, and then he did come back on a one-year deal, $3 million contract in February. So he did have stuff to prove as a member of the club, and he proved that he has stuff still, and he does deserve to be the fifth starter in the Sox rotation. And going back on what DJ Benny Bull said, he had a perfect game actually going into the ninth inning with one out, but he hit Roberto Perez on a back foot slider, hit his foot, and lost the perfect game. And right there, he could have unraveled, he could have imploded and given up a no-hitter, but instead he buckled down and recorded the last two outs with a strikeout and a ground ball to the third baseman to record the no-hitter. And he threw 114 pitches, 75 strikes, and hit 98.8 miles per hour on average with his four-seam fastball, according to StatCast. And
he wanted a slider.
Yeah.
And he got it.
Yep. His slider's good.
And he was like, I'm going to let it hit me. Yeah, getting a perfect game. I'll do the same thing if I was hitting. And also, added, you got to earn it.
And a quote by Carlos, he said, on Zoom, it's a pretty special moment, said a beaming Rodon postgame. Not many people can say they've thrown a no-hitter in Major League Baseball. We always talk about it, it seems like. And he said, it feels good to finally sit here and tell you I dominated today, and I felt good. I've never really done that. I've never done this level, at least. It feels good to say I did it. Quote by Carlos.
Such a good one for Southsiders and really fans, the White Sox universe, to hear this. So I'm sure Cubs fans are also gloating.
Oh, yeah, I'm not a White Sox fan, but I am more than happy for him that he threw a no-hitter. I know how difficult that can be, and the man deserves a break. He's had so much issues getting back on the field from injury, so finally getting a no-hitter is great.
That's right. Yeah, and it's funny that manager Tony La Russa made a special promise. Wait for it. The one and only Zach Collins, our catcher, who was behind the plate for his first career no-hitter. He thought it was for his lack of recognition of that leading to the great court convention. And so manager La Russa made special promise to Collins for 4 Wednesdays. That if he caught a shutout, Collins could have Lenders' office. It didn't sound like it was much of a, much for laughter or jokes. And Larissa said, with the excitement, I thought he'd forget. He walked by, I said, clear out, I've been in there. Said, you had a no hitter, that kind of feels that. And a home clubhouse manager, Warren, moving my things into my locker. I was moving my things into his locker, so I'm glad to give it up. Yeah, you already mentioned the Zoom from this past morning, actually. And exactly what came after that was just amazing. Couldn't have said it better. So it's a good start for his career. So
I have one final comment to wrap up this episode. To show how even more improbable the no-hitter was, he was supposed to start Monday's game against Cleveland, but had a stomach problem, so he was scratched from that game. And insanely enough, 2 days later, he threw a no-hitter. So he had a stomach problem on Monday, but he came on Wednesday and threw a no-hitter. And he broke a record, actually. I mentioned it earlier, but according to stats, he had Tommy John surgery on May 15th, 2019, and became the first MLB pitcher ever to throw a no-hitter within 2 years after having Tommy John surgery.
Wow. That's an amazing feat in itself. And really overcoming the odds, which is what Jackie Robinson would have liked to see and what he's done. Making history during his time.
Yep.
So that is good timing, and you know, a lot of things are of course not planned, and this just seemed to be such a good way to really start the week, if you will, or just set the tone for the week. So it's very cool.
Thank you for listening to episode 66 of the Bull and Hawk Sports Show. As always, we are very happy to produce more content on the show, and stay tuned for upcoming content in the upcoming weeks.
4 days.
4 days, correct.
Yeah, make sure to subscribe, listen to us. We're available everywhere podcasts are heard. So that includes Anchor, especially for any musical segments, musical shows or episodes. And then also
Spotify. Harvard.